From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Things we've used every day seem eternal until they don't. Once, that was the typewriter. Essential, then gone. Now, say some, it may be the desktop computer, the old powerhouse of keyboard, start screen, mouse tower that was for most for decades the computer. Now everything seems to be going mobile. Handheld, smartphones, tablets, even the new Windows operating system looks ready to carry. This hour on Point, will the desktop computer go the way of the typewriter, of the dodo? You can join the conversation. Is your old desktop still your mainstay? Or is it looking lonely these days, a little dusty? Are you out on the sofa with your tablet, on the go with your handheld? Does it matter to you anymore? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me in the studio today is Hiawatha Bray, tech reporter for the Boston Globe. He's been looking at the new devices coming on the market and is here today with the Windows 8 Surface tablet released just last week. Hiawatha Bray, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Glad to be here.
And with us in the studio is Frank Gillette, vice president and tech analyst for Forrester Research. He's been thinking a lot about the way we will be computing in years to come or next week. Frank Gillette, great to have you here as well.
Thank you.
We'll hear later in this hour from Christina Bonnington, staff writer for Wired's Gadget blog. Hiawatha,
yeah.
Dodo, the desktop is Dodo. Is it a Dodo in your life, or what's the balance of
Dodo,
power?
Dodo, I would say certainly not. Frankly, I was a little surprised to hear you say that, because it sounds like the old argument about the death of the mainframe. And you kept hearing people talking about how the personal computer was going to bury the mainframe.
And still, I don't have a mainframe at my house. I don't know about you.
Mainframes are very much alive and well. The biggest problem that IBM was having was making sure that people wouldn't know how to use them. They've had to go to universities and set up training programs.
Right.
But the mainframe, just because of the personal computer coming along, those big room-sized computers are still out there. Same thing with the desktop. There are certain things for which it is still going to be a very well-suited kind of technology. But you are seeing that the form of the desktop computer is changing radically.
Well, the form, but also, I mean, people are responding here to us here online, frankly. And Michael says, hey, what's a desktop? And what is a dodo? Already gone.
Mm-hmm.
Here, Richard says, me? Two laptops and an iPhone, dumped desktops a long time back. There's a lot of buzz about that thing beginning to look more like the clickety-clack antique of the typewriter.
So this is one of those things that is oversimplified. Mm-hmm. I think what we're talking about is an and, not
mm-hmm.
an or.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way I think about this era is mobile plus PC, where PC means both laptop and desktop. And
yeah.
I actually think what's at risk is laptops, not desktops.
Because the laptop is that kind of little bridge between the two, and they'll be supplanted by more and more effective tablets and all the rest.
Right. The way to think about this is there are lots of times we want portable small screens.
Yeah.
And to do that, we make a bunch of compromises, not just on the size of the screen, but also the power, the battery life, and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to a flat surface and we want to work, we want the opposite. We want a large screen, lots of power, not have to worry about battery life.
And yet, Hiawatha, you know, here's another. On Facebook, Vicky writes to us, what desktop?
Yeah.
I mean, lots of people who don't have to sit down and do some heavy lifting have pretty much migrated away from it already.
Well, no, I think that is true. Absolutely. I mean, I notice it in my own life. I have a desktop computer at home. And by the way, I just managed to fry it while I was trying to install Windows 8.
Oh.
No, the hardware is fine, but it completely screwed up
the
everything.
Software. Okay.
The software. And now it's just sitting there. Once upon a time, that would have been, oh no, my computer, what am I going to do? Now I just grab my laptop, or I could grab, I have an iPad I can grab that belongs to my wife, and just keep on going. Or for that matter, increasingly, when I'm doing things like surfing the web and checking my email, I just whip out my iPhone or my Android phone, and that's that. I don't even think about opening a computer.
Tastes and patterns and use are changing. Let's get our listeners right in here. Mm-hmm. Ian is calling. Ian's calling from Old Saybrook, Connecticut. Ian, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you see going on?
Hi, Tom. I work at Old Saybrook in I work at Staples in Old Saybrook, and I am part of the new movement for the Windows 8 operating system that Staples is putting through, and I can see that through this, as well as several of the tablets coming in, that the tablet will be the way of the future.
Why does Windows 8, big to-do about it last week, and you're there at Staples, so you see a lot of action going on, Ian, why does Windows 8 mean we're headed away from the desktop?
Well, I mean, Windows 8 is primarily, from what we've gathered, is Windows 7 with a tablet feature. Everything is on Windows 8 as if it were a very simple process like it is the smartphone, the iPhone. I mean, that's pretty much what Windows 8 is turning into. What Windows 8 is.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are making that observation. And what about desktop? When people come into your store, you got a lot for sale. Where are their eyes traveling? To the desktops or to all that handheld mobile on-the-go stuff, Ian?
Majority of them come to see the laptops, the tablets. I mean, I get a few here and there for desktops, but I mean, that's rare now.
Ian, I appreciate your call. I mean, Frank, there it is. Ian's right on the shop floor. He sees what's moving, what's selling. And he looks at Windows 8 and says, this is the signal that we're moving away from the desktop. Put it in your words. Why is that so?
So two things, Tom. One, we have to keep in mind the difference between trying to figure out what's going to happen several years from now and what's happening in Staples this morning. So I think the Windows 8 is the leading indicator, and what's happening in Staples is the lagging indicator. So when we think further out, a lot of the folks walking into Staples haven't yet sort of realized, oh, I can do a lot of what I want to do on my laptop, on a tablet, and have a better experience.
I think from what Ian's saying, they may be figuring it out right now, sort of minute by minute.
But I think what you'll see 3 years from now is people will be coming back in and saying, this 10-inch screen or 7-inch screen is too dinky when I get to my desktop. I want a big screen. And you know what? That little laptop screen isn't much bigger, so I don't want to bother with that. And Windows 8, by introducing touch and sort of giving people that tablet feel, is kind of dragging them in that direction.
What's your guess in terms of, you know, person hours spent computing that were on desktop, I don't know, 5 years ago, versus how the balance of person hours today or 5 years from now, the amount, the percentage of our computing time we're going to be spending with something in our hand rather than on a desktop?
Well, I think it depends on what you do, which is why I think this movement is so powerful. The desktop computer is definitely going to wane in usefulness, precisely because increasingly what we do on computers are things that can be done with relatively lightweight, relatively simple applications that don't need either the screen space or the heavy-duty horsepower.
Things like what?
Oh, for example, listening to music, surfing the web, checking your email, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Texting, tweeting.
Those are the things we mostly do. And suddenly you notice, well, I don't really need a full-fledged desktop computer to do that. But obviously, if you're sitting in an office someplace, running some fairly advanced software, you're still going to need that technology.
Oh, yeah.
However, even then, the form, we keep talking about desktop computers. People don't put computers on their desktops anymore anyway, unless actually the only computer you find on a desktop is a laptop.
You mean your laptop tower is under or gone or just in the back of the screen.
And increasingly, it's not even going to be a tower. Look at, was it last week or the week before, Apple introduced the newest Mac Mini. And the Mac Mini is a little box smaller than this. You've got your desk phone
here.
It's just a little box. And there's no reason not to do that because you can take all the high-end components and put them in a box about, you know, smaller than a bread box.
But you're really pointing to what computing is even going to mean. One time it meant punching a lot of text probably into a screen. In the future, it's much more integrated seamlessly into all kinds of aspects of our
life. But again, that's not always the case. And no, you made a great, that's a great point. It's the difference between the consumer of data and the generator of data. If you are a creator, if you are a writer, musician, et cetera, you are going to continue to need the input devices like keyboards. You're going to continue to want a large screen and so on. So a lot of this stuff depends on what you're doing.
Well, but even there, I can picture some kinds of creators who may be creating right off that laptop, even some smaller handheld. Nancy in Cohasset, Massachusetts. Nancy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just have to, from my personal experience, confirm exactly what your guest just said. I am a graphic designer and writer.
Yep.
And I have recently upgraded from my Apple Tower to one of those tiny little Mac Minis. That does just fine on my desktop, but I have to have my huge, huge
monitor, yeah.
And so when I'm working on Adobe Illustrator, Adobe Photoshop, or any of the other Adobe writing softwares, I mean, I need them right up there. Sometimes overlapping, sometimes in Windows.
Right. So that's never going to be you, Nancy, on the iPad or the little smartphone during the work that's your livelihood.
I can't do it at all. I would barely be able to see my designs on those. I think for me, those remain recreational, not professional.
Yeah, point taken, Nancy. And we picture all your graphic designing going on, all those screens up on all your monitors. I mean, there is a kind of work here, and not just work. A lot of gamers are writing in too saying, don't you touch our desktops.
That's right.
It's not going to go away, Frank.
So I think where we're headed is a remaking, a reinvention of the desktop PC, not obliteration,
mm-hmm.
right? What we're looking at, I think, is something like the iMac, an all-in-one computer. It's all in the display. It's all about the big glass, mm-hmm. but it's about a new generation of sensors, some of which are in the labs but not yet in products, things that do eye tracking, that read your emotions off your face, that are around the bezel, the periphery of those big all-in-one computers. So when you think ahead, we don't really understand where it's going to go yet, most of us, but where it's going to go is, for those of you who do need big screens in creation, you'll have one at your desk at work, you'll have one at your desk at home, and then in between you'll be using the tablets and the smartphones, and you'll spend more of your time, many of you, on those portable devices. But when you sit down at a desk, you'll want the big screen.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're asking this hour if the desktop computer is going the way of the dodo, the typewriter, as mobile, handheld, phones, pads, everything seems to take over. Hiawatha Brea of the Boston Globe is with us today, and Frank Gillette from Forrester Research, both with me in the studio. Here's a little voice from the not-too-distant past. This was the D8 Technology Conference in 2010. Then Apple CEO Steve Jobs talking about how desktops will fill, he said, a smaller and smaller niche in the future.
PCs are going to be like trucks. They're still going to be around. They're still going to have a lot of value, but they're going to be used by one out of X people.
One out of X, and one out of X could be a pretty big number in that X slot. I mean, is there a portion of the population, you think, that may not even have one, that may not have one at home, to get a keyboard for their iPad and that'll do, period? What do you think, Frank?
Yes, there is a segment of the population, significant, call it, say, a quarter or more, who are going to be happy with, you know, a tablet and sometimes a keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Jeremy in Boston. Jeremy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I'm a partner in a startup, and we specifically work with schools and help them with their struggles with technology and their struggles with change, because there's a lot of change that's always happening in technology.
Sure.
And it's interesting to see how the struggle and how this change to mobile computing is hitting education and schools. We often get brought into schools now to help them with their move to mobile computing, because for the first time really ever, knowledge is becoming incredibly free. Because people can learn anything, have access to unlimited information no matter where they are, when they are, just from a device that fits in their pocket, we can take students out of the classroom and help them access the facts and the information that they need no matter where they are.
Well, fair enough, Jeremy, but what about when it comes times for them to really interact? I mean, here we've got a listener online, Roy in Boise, Idaho, I guess, says, checking email or playing Words with Friends is one thing. He says, try writing a term paper on a tablet, not exclamation mark. What do you say, Jeremy?
I have a couple responses to that. I mean, first of all, I don't think we're talking about necessarily writing term papers. I don't think that is necessarily learning. That's one way of assessing how students have learned, or how much students have learned. But with mobile computing, the assignments that you can give students are so much more real. Writing a term paper is great, and I think research skills are very important. But the fact that you can be on site in a historical location, find out information about that location, both, you know, from first-hand sources, but also then do some research from your mobile device at the same time, add even more value to it. But on top of that, people are learning socially through mobile devices. So they're not just learning by reading or by exploring on, you know, sites in person.
Yeah, Jeremy, I'm so glad for your call, because you're describing really in the education sector a whole different style of learning. Mm-hmm. Let us take that for a second and see if Hiawatha Brea and Frank Gillette are old fogies or what here.
Yeah, I'm an old fogie.
Jeremy says, look, writing a term paper is one way of learning, but it's not the only way. And once computing power is in your hands, you're going to be off and running with it. You know, it's just a different way of learning. So I wonder, now it is, you could look at that and say, no, that's just consuming facts. That's not learning, or that's not engaging.
Well, no, it's not that he's entirely wrong. wrong is that another part of learning is creating information and demonstrating your mastery of this knowledge. That involves things like writing and generating original content. And for that kind of purpose, a lot of these mobile devices just aren't as good. And for that kind of thing, you are going to continue to need some really high-quality input device. And that's one of the things that's holding back the complete, I guess, mobilization of everything. Alternative input devices, alternatives to the keyboard, still aren't quite there yet. I mean, the keyboard obviously isn't perfect, but things like talking to your computer and so on is still, I mean, it works in the sense that the computer makes out what you're saying, but it's still fairly primitive in that, you know, the computer doesn't clearly understand it, and so it doesn't get grammar and syntax and everything.
Right.
It's just a string of words.
But here's the thing, Frank. We know these things are a two-way street. Once you have a new tool, it begins to change the way we behave. Maybe Jeremy's saying the way maybe we think about learning. Okay, I'll carry Jeremy's flag here for a second.
Yes.
But we've got listeners online worrying it could go the other way, that the appeal of the mobile computing is so great. It's so nifty. You can carry it all over. You can see it anytime. Mad Mark here says, we will always need a high-resolution space in which to work. He says, I pray no one will try to force more lobotomies on people who do real work on computers. I guess the sort of fear there is that we will adapt ourselves to a diminished computing capacity that's sexy because it's mobile.
Yeah, and I think that would be a huge mistake. That's why I think the large screen computing experience will be remade. I don't think keyboards go away, but I think voice input and transcription plays a role. But think about it. You can't use voice to take notes in a meeting, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of disrupts the meeting.
Or in an office. You're working in an office.
So we're not talking about or replacement. We're talking about substitution. And to Steve's Jobs' line about, you know, PCs or trucks, pickup trucks were the largest selling models in the United States for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're still selling in huge volume.
Well, and partly for similar reasons, the value. They're cheaper. Utility, and they were cheaper. Mm-hmm. I mean, desktops, I don't know, are they going to be cheaper per,
well, they are.
Per ounce
they
of computing power
are
than all the fancy little stuff?
They have
always
been for many years. You can, I mean, and they've leveled out right about $500, $600 these days.
Well, the typical
each
tower.
Exactly. Each generation of those $500 desktops becomes massively more powerful.
But Albert in Easton, Maryland is calling. Hi, Albert. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We used to talk a lot about something called a convergence device for media, and it seems to be the smartphone, because now the smartphone can Bluetooth to a large screen or to a keyboard or anything, I have found, and it's practically a supercomputer with the power that's in it now.
Yeah.
Oh, he's absolutely right.
You can carry it around your pocket.
So who needs anything clunky here? I mean, just throw a bunch of low-cost screens around your house or workplace and have your smartphone and...
And I think that's the mistake. I think that doesn't appreciate the technology changes we have coming. For example, the eye-tracking software, the other things that are going to get built into displays. So I think the way to understand...
And a smartphone won't be able to handle those, you're saying?
No, it won't, because the compromise is to make it go in your pocket, even if it's reinforced on the back end by a bunch of this cloud computing stuff. Those are compromises. And when you get to a large screen and you sit down with that keyboard, but with all the other sensors we're going to have, I think you're going to be talking about a different experience here, Tom.
That is really interesting. People want a combination. I mean, Greg writes to us. He says, I still have a couple of typewriters that I use when I'm grumpy with the modern world. People may want to go in the Wayback Machine sometimes. But you reference some of these different ways of interacting with computers, the Way Forward Machine. Christina Bonington joins us right now, Frank Hiawatha, from San Francisco, staff writer for Wired's blog, The Gadget Lab. Christina, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Talk to us about the very forward ways in which we may be interacting with our computers, desktop and otherwise, that may keep us wanting that big, high-powered screen. What is this about eye tracking and all the rest? What's out there, Christina?
Yeah, so at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show last year, I got to check out some software from a company called Tobii, and it lets you, you're sitting in front of a large display, it tracks your eyes, and so you can do everything you would normally do with a mouse or a trackpad or even with a touchscreen, but you're just using your eyes. And so their prototype let you say if you're reading text on the screen, as your eyes move down the screen, the text automatically scrolls up.
So did you try it, Christina? Did you do it yourself?
I did, yeah. I tried it probably for too long.
I mean, I have a feeling I'd feel like some kind of, you know, galley slave chained in there. Everything I did with my eyes was going to control my computer. I'm not sure I want my eyes to be that disciplined when I'm looking at a screen. I kind of like to roll them around.
Yeah, and it takes some practice, because if you if you look off to the side or something, if you get distracted by something, then that can reflect in something that happens on screen. You know, you might accidentally scroll to another app or something instead of staying in whatever app you're in at the time.
I'm feeling oppressed already, but maybe I'd get used to it. And the idea here is that it would take the place of a mouse to a large degree.
Yeah, and so in one of the situations that would be especially useful is for people that have limited mobility, if they're paralyzed, and then their eye movements really are the only way that they can interact with the world.
Stephen Hawking is early adopter here. Now, and if I stare meaningfully at an icon, then it opens up or something?
Yes, yeah. So if you focus on an icon for a certain amount of time, then it knows that you intend to open that up. You can look to the right to say, for instance, to scroll through maybe some images on screen, stare at something to select something.
And what about gesture controls, Christina? What's that about?
So we already actually... Gesture control is already in the home right now. There's something like 18 million Kinects that are in homes across the world. And with those, you can use gestures to navigate through the on-screen menus. And we're going to see that a lot more with these large displays, things like your TV's in the living room, maybe something that's in a store.
Forgive me, because this is not in my home yet. What, I'm facing the screen, and I use my hands like a symphony conductor to don't touch the screen, but just by gesturing, I move stuff around, I control, Christina?
Yeah, pretty much. So with a Kinect, it's pretty large arm movements. You know, you swipe one way to select something, swipe another way to go back up a menu or to select, what movie you want to watch or something. For a TV living room situation, it makes sense to have movements that large. But when you start thinking about, a notebook computer or a desktop, you don't want to be waving your arms in front of your face to do that.
So in other words, if people want to be able to take advantage of these new gestures and eye tracking and new kinds of control, it's going to be more or less the heir to the desktop, not the smartphone that they'll be interacting with?
Right. So I think these different ways of interacting with our computers are just going to depend on what the situation is, where you are, and what size of the display is.
Right. But that's going to be pretty sexy stuff once it really gets up and rolling. Christina, stand by there in San Francisco. We've got Sean calling from Carlsbad, California. Sean, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
I think that as much as everyone would like to get, to a point where we're all wireless, I personally don't feel like we have that that 100% reliability right now. And I think that it would be great for interconnectivity that you can have your small portable tablet, can walk in your house, and that could go right onto your large screen TV. But until we have that reliability between the wireless and the interconnectivity, I think there's still going to be a need for people to plug in.
Hiawatha, is that coming?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the issue that he's raising isn't so much a matter of, inside the house, because I think it's pretty reliable now. There are already all these technologies like DLNA and all these other things that allow you to, for example, and it's not just for computers. Like, you can get a camera now. You walk into the house, connect your camera to your TV, and all your pictures appear on the TV set. That's available right now. But what worries me about all this, is, especially in terms of the mobile aspect of it, is the reliability of the cloud itself, because increasingly, one of the reasons these mobile devices are so powerful is that they aren't doing a lot of the computing.
It's
a lot of the computing
there.
Is off happening out there. Mm-hmm. And we just got a taste of it. I don't know if you've noticed this, but since Hurricane Sandy, a number of major websites in New York have just vanished from view because
the data centers
where they were located went down. They are not redundant, and we lost access to that. Now, it's been minor because I don't think anything really huge has gone down, but that gives you an idea of how dependent we could find ourselves becoming on computers that are not in our home. Mm. I mean, if we're saying, well, we don't need the desktop anymore because so much of it resides out there, what happens if out there is flooded out?
Frank, survivalists love desktops because it's roll your own at home.
Well, sure. Yeah, if you can be independent and take action without the grid, so much the better if you've got that mindset. But look, it's not just the survivalists, right? Mm-hmm. It's people who want millisecond response, right? If you work in a way that requires fast, fluid response, it's really hard to do that from a data center 1,000 miles away. Mm-hmm. Now, They're getting better at it. And, you know, someday we'll all have the gigabit Ethernet, you know, that Google is trying to roll out there.
Right.
But we don't today. And especially when we're on the mobile devices, mm-hmm. it's much harder for the snappy response all the time. So, yeah, wireless isn't completely trustworthy. It is getting better. But, you know, the best experience is one where as much as possible happens locally.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Virginia, calling from Wellesley, Massachusetts. Virginia, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm calling from Mobiquity here in Wellesley. We develop mobile solutions for business.
Okay.
And, you know, one thing we've discovered is that the user experience on mobile is very different than on the desktop, and really mm-hmm. users should be given consideration so that the applications engage them. And, you know, as we're moving away from the traditional desktop computing or maybe moving more off of desktop to mobile, you know, we need to think differently about how applications are built so that we're not just shoehorning desktop apps into mobile.
And when you say very different, you just mean it's a different interaction or a different quality, not as effective,
you know, across every screen, the way mm-hmm. the user engages with, you know, the interface that they're looking at is different. You know, it's a smaller
sure.
screen on mobile. You know, you want to see the whole site. A lot of times when you go to a website and then you go to it on mobile, it's different and you can't see everything. Or, you know, if you're expecting employees to use something, it needs to be just as engaging across all the different, as we like to say, panes of glass.
Let's say that all the panes of glass are equally engaging and efficacious, Virginia. Which one's going to win, desktop or mobile?
Well, I think we're still waiting to see the answer on that. But, you know, we're inclined to say mobile is definitely taking the lead in a lot of things. And people are just, you know, so used to picking up their phone or their iPad now and making purchases. So, you know, it's whatever's convenient to you, to the user.
Virginia, thank you for calling. Christina, what's your sense? You're in San Francisco. Is there like a big race on here, a big contest between one side of this mobile line and the stationary side, or is it the wrong way to look at it?
So I think right now a lot of people, they use their smartphones and tablets in addition to their desktop. They're still used to their traditional desktop experience. Mm-hmm. They still use it for work, especially, but for more social applications, for just getting information on the fly, they turn to the mobile device. So, but a lot of people are starting to use, say, their iPad to take notes in meetings and things like that instead of using a pen and paper or a notebook computer. But for the most part, I think the two still, for now, have separate use cases. But the lines are starting to bleed.
Do you see them as competing camps, or is everybody got a foot everywhere?
So I tend to see them as complementary, but Microsoft, I think, thinks of them as complementary a bit, and then I think that Apple, on the other hand, thinks of them more as competing. You know, the mobile experience is completely separate from the desktop.
And Apple wants to win. Hiawatha, you're...
I don't know. I'm just thinking, because I don't know that Apple entirely thinks they're competing. And I know the way I found myself using my desktop, fascinating, as I think about it now, more and more often when I'm even at home, I'm using my laptop to do work, and my desktop is increasingly becoming a server. I keep tons of stuff there, like files, documents, and music. And more often, I don't sit in front of the computer and use it. I sit, and even at work, I will go and download stuff from my home desktop, and that's what I'll be doing with it.
It's your data center.
It's my data center. I store my stuff there.
Hiawatha Brave, Frank Gillette, please stand by. Christina Bonnington with Wired Magazine in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us today, Christina.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're asking today if the desktop computer is going the way of the dodo, the typewriter, as mobile, handheld, phones, iPads, everything takes over. Hiawatha Brea of the Boston Globe is with us today, and Frank Gillette from Forrester Research, both with me in the studio. Hiawatha, Frank, lots of fun response here online. I mean, you know, a lot of it is along the lines of, Stephen says, I couldn't live without my desktop, much more productive, large screen, large speakers, no battery, easier, cheaper to upgrade, less fragile.
Yep.
Who upgrades anymore?
What's that all about?
Gamers upgrade, guys.
Well, Becky says, look, you can always plug a device into a larger screen. I don't see why a desktop computer is essential for a big screen.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
But then you've got here Jin Shun, the gamers speak. Desktop computers going away, never going to happen as long as the PC gaming community exists. But is that a real anchor here, or does that also move eventually, Frank?
Well, there are those who argue that gaming has already moved into smartphones and tablets. And so what the hardcore gamers are referring to is the experiences that they have where they need powerful computing right next to their desk.
Yeah, boom.
Some of that may move to the data center. But you know, I'm not a fan of this sort of either-or approach. Mm-hmm. I think what we're talking about is a spectrum of devices, and the spectrum is expanding.
Jeremy Absolutely. Writes to us, Hiawatha, is my desktop now sits behind my entertainment center, streaming media to my 50-inch TV via my app on my iPhone.
Bingo.
I mean, talk about melange. You know, it's all the desktop has evolved into the home theater, PC, HTPC, as it's now referred to.
Exactly. No, exactly what I was saying. You use their desktop as a server. I have a little piece of software on mine called Tonido. It's a free piece of software.
Okay.
And it simply turns my desktop computer into a server. Any file that I've got on my desktop anywhere in the world, I can just go get it. Mm-hmm. And you can do the same thing by connecting it up to, you can connect it to your home stereo. You can connect it to your TV set. Mm-hmm. And that's increasingly what people are doing with these machines. And that is indeed, I think, where you're going to see the traditional PC migrating to in the home anyway.
Let's go to Ben in New Orleans, Louisiana. Ben, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was concerned about the security of having a mobile device without having a backup. I mean, it's bad enough you lose your device, you lose your pictures and your music, but what about your financial data, your tax returns, and things of that nature? How do you, without having a, like you said earlier, a data center, how do you back that up?
Yeah, what about security? And they're both for just secure storage, but also, like, it's not so vulnerable to somebody just slipping in and snatching it.
Right. So the caller's comment is about disaster recovery, and so a lot of mobile devices now, operating system or the network provider gives you a way to back up the device and therefore restore your data if you lose the device. Mm-hmm. The other question about security, it's really interesting because Apple and Microsoft have chosen to curate their stores and vet all the applications and make sure that what's going into your tablet or smartphone, that they've tried to check it out, whereas Google's gone for a more open system where they don't check it closely, but then they go through after the fact based on complaints.
Well, they've announced they're going to start moving toward a more curated approach because so many cases – I mean, they are the one platform out here for mobile devices that have really seen a significant number of malware starting to appear for these devices. And now Google is saying we're going to start checking this stuff out before we put it in the Google store.
So do you think of your data as more secure from theft or malware, you know, vandalism – on your desktop or in your mobile cloud world, Hiawatha?
Well, I don't know. I think it's all pretty vulnerable pretty much everywhere. I don't feel entirely safe anyplace. I just try to keep everything backed up. I'm one of those guys who uses Carbonite. But there you go. I use the cloud. I back it up in the cloud.
You use a service.
Yeah, I use a service.
Belt and suspenders. You do a backup at home. Mm-hmm. You do a backup to a service. Because if the house burns down or somebody comes in and steals all the stuff at home, it's no good if you've done it all yourself.
Ben, in New Orleans, belt and suspenders is the advice here. I don't know how that goes down as a fashion statement in New Orleans these days. Andre in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Andre, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My comment is about the I'm an avid PC gamer and enthusiast builder. The age of the consoles right now is making PC building and gaming much bigger than it ever was before. More people are upgrading than ever before.
Well, no, he's making a fascinating point. This is a wonderful world of gaming thing that you have to be into. See, here's what's happening. The Xbox, the PlayStation 3 are the really leading consoles for gaming, but they're all like 5 or 6 years old now. They are nowhere near state of the art. Now, the hardcore gamers, they want to play these games in as advanced a form as possible.
Right.
I know a guy at the Globe who has spent $7,000 building a machine just so he can play Battlefield at state of the art levels.
But these are the people who buy Ferraris.
Exactly.
Guys. These are not mainstream.
Well, no, they're not the people. That's the thing. You can do this if you couldn't afford a Ferrari, but you can afford to spend, I don't know but you can afford to spend $5,000 or $6,000.
As a portion of the population, it's 1%. It's a very small number.
Exactly.
Andre, how do you think this all works out in the end for gamers?
Well, I can build a PC 10 times more powerful than any laptop for half the price.
Yes.
I don't know.
How much do you normally spend?
$700, $800.
Oh, you're on the low end. Good heavens.
Yeah.
Well, he knows how to make a souped up.
As good as I want.
I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying that the really hardcore people out there, they actually even build their own cases for these things. We didn't even talk about it. They're called case modders, and we didn't even get into that. You would not believe some of the things you'll see out there. People like the spaceship from Alien turned into a computer.
Andre, soup it up and have a lot of fun with it. I appreciate your call. Let's go to Skeeter in Huntington, Vermont. Skeeter, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
I don't see desk desktop computer is going away anytime soon for one very important reason. The conversion to mobile is likely to run into stiff resistance from a very important segment of the computing world, businesses.
Mm-hmm. Bingo, of course.
60% of business computers still run on Windows XP and are only now converting to Windows 7.
Okay, long term, why would they be vulnerable to the mobile move, Skeeter? Why wouldn't they go?
Resistant to it because there are many powerful business computing applications that would require far more bandwidth than even the most powerful laptops are capable of carrying today.
And will that remain the case? And I mean, sooner or later, couldn't even business, Frank, migrate to this new mobile, less tethered world?
We see a mix, right? Because what we see is some salespeople ditching laptops, and they get a tablet and a desktop. So what we're predicting here is that tablets decline, desktop PCs rise as tablets rise. But let's keep this in perspective. We think in 2016,
laptops decline,
okay. Desktops rise,
yep.
Tablets rise.
Yep.
What we think will be in 2016 is about 2 billion PCs in use.
Okay.
So that's a mix of laptop and desktop, but shifting away from laptops back towards desktops, and about 750 million tablets in use, but, you know, call it, say, a billion plus smartphones.
So that puts the numbers, almost even up then.
Yes.
When you add all those up.
That's correct.
Skeeter, I appreciate your call. Nick in Newburgh, Indiana. Nick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm one of those Ferrari buyer case motters that you had mentioned.
Right. Vroom, vroom.
That gentleman, he had a good point where, you know, they're not going to go away because we have games that people like to play on high end. But my point is further than that. It's with all the mobile gaming, there's no demand for the high end performance equipment anymore. I built a machine 6 months ago out of top of the line equipment for $2,000. This is a side machine for my girlfriend's house when I'm over there overnight. This is at my rig for $2,000. And that was the state of the art stuff.
Right.
There's no forward movement because the games are not going to be on PC anymore. They're going to be on mobile devices.
That's a great point. I was going to ask.
Momentum play here.
No, I was going to ask about that because how many of the top end games are even going to be coming out for PC anymore is not clear to me at all.
So-called AAA games.
Yeah, right. The AAA games. I mean, the ones that nowadays, they don't even sell them in stores anymore. You download them over services like Steam and things like that. And is the population of those games starting to really dwindle?
Nick, what do you say?
I think it is. And that's something that we've been seeing is they're building to the technology and not above the technology. There was a game called Crysis not too long ago.
Oh, yes.
That would be the question you would ask around the circle was, how fast can you run Crysis? How fast can you run Crysis?
Yes.
Because that game was built so far beyond current technology, you couldn't run it at even half at the modern equipment when the game came out.
See, that's what I keep wondering. If we're going to build to the technology, if mobile is so appealing that people will end up accepting less in terms of sophistication or even speed because humans, among the things we like to do is move. Nick, I appreciate your call. One more. I want to look at Windows 8 with you guys, but Ann is calling from Richmond, Vermont. Thank you, Nick, in Indiana. Ann, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, this is a point I haven't heard made yet. I'm a physical therapist, and many of my patients have neck pain.
Okay.
And for those folks, a laptop or a tablet really puts them in a really bad position for their neck.
Mm.
In addition, all of us baby boomers, we have a hard time seeing those screens. So when I'm working with patients all day, I have a little laptop that I use, and then at the end of the day, when I finish the bulk of my paperwork, I hook it to a big screen.
So the desktop you're saying is actually more friendly to people who have physical impediments?
Yes, or at least if you have neck pain, because you're not so bent over trying to look at that screen. Your posture and your neck position is really driven by your ability to see.
I think Anne is saying something different
here,
which is that when we've got to think about how this changes. You know, people worried, well, maybe tapping on the screen to wear out our thumbs.
Mm-hmm.
What she's talking about is that if you plunk a laptop down on the desk, your ergonomics are all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Your elbows aren't next to your side.
Yeah.
They're stretched out. Your eyes are looking down, which is why I think when we get to a flat surface, we're going to take that tablet and rack it at eye level and have it work with a large PC screen, which I'm calling a frame in the time frame 2016.
A frame, but not a traditional desktop computer.
Correct.
But
a tower.
But better interaction. Let's look at Windows 8. I mean, this drives a lot of action over time. Windows operating system is still a big, big deal. Just last week we've come out with this. Where does this take us in this whole conversation? What do you say, Frank?
So Windows 8 tries to have two different faces, right? It has tries to have the Windows 7 desktop face and the Windows 8 modern or Metro user interface. But by sticking together and forcing everyone to go through that start screen that is mobile, even on a 27-inch display, it's really awkward. And so what you have is something that's a bit of a boat car today.
Because it's got the look of a mobile screen with more of the chiclets and stuff like an iPhone would have.
Yes.
But even when it's up on a big desktop screen.
Right. So what's ultimately going to save Microsoft is the fact there's already a billion PCs out there with Windows. It's going to take them a while to get Windows 8 right. And what we say is that Windows 8 really won't get going in the mass market until 2014 because they'll have to refine it for tablets, they'll have to refine it for desktops, and create a bit more separation than they have today.
Hi, Walter, you've got something up on the desk here, on the table.
This is the Surface. Nobody here can see it. This is the Surface tablet, and it's a perfect illustration of what Mr. Gillette is talking about.
Looks like an iPad with a full keyboard.
Yeah, with a keyboard, I just popped it off here. As you can see, it's got the kickstand.
Tense up at an angle to it with a kickstand, so it looks kind of like a mini laptop.
And you can use it that way, basically. In fact, one of the interesting things about the Surface, it will come with a complete version of Microsoft Office at no extra charge.
The RT version.
Right, the RT version of Microsoft Office at no extra charge. But the thing of it is that this tries to combine the metaphors of a
touch screen. You're swiping across it there.
Yeah, I'm swiping across it here. I'm making the – there you go. You can see this is their start. Instead of a start button, you get a start screen with all these icons.
So it really works like a tablet, like what we think of as a tablet, though it looks and sits like a desktop in a very simple terms.
But you're also expected to use a keyboard and a mouse, and the going back and forth can be very confusing. But I must admit, not quite as confusing as I thought it was going to be, because here's the key thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people forget that Surface really is assuming that you are going to buy the next generation of computer. And here's something we hadn't talked about
yet. You can't use this on your old screen, obviously.
You can, but it won't work that well.
Okay.
Future computers, just about every new laptop and even every new desktop is going to have a touch screen on it.
Even if it's a big honking frame.
I don't think so.
Well, that's Microsoft's hope anyway.
That's Microsoft's hope. I don't think that's
what's
going
to
happen.
Well, but what about to Christina's point earlier? Maybe you don't actually touch it, but you gesture toward it.
You look at it. That's right.
Well, this does not have that yet, but of course Microsoft has been pioneering that with Kinect, and it's very likely they're going to try to do something along those lines.
Well, I don't know. People are going to go crazy when the kids have their peanut butter and then start smearing their all over your big monitor.
That already happens with the iPad, you know?
Well, but it's different when it's the 27-inch display instead of the 9-inch.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a minute. There's jelly on my beautiful monitor.
Problem with this is you find yourself having to go back and forth, sometimes using the keyboard and mouse, sometimes using the touchscreen, and the metaphors are so confusing. It took us forever to go from the command line interface to the icons where you point and click, and we got used to that, but now there's a consistent pattern there. And this is basically trying to force you to shift gears twice at the same time. Mm-hmm. And you can hear the gears grinding as you use it.
Yeah, you can see it with Windows 8. Steve in Boston, you're on the air, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'm a little wary of technologists shaping progress, and let me explain that a big difference between a laptop and a tablet is that a tablet application developer has to be sanctioned by Apple, and a laptop developer can go out and buy a compiler and start shipping applications. So what are Apple's motivations in replacing tablets with laptops or vice versa in schools? And just an observation that tablets are, we're creating a league of spectators and consumers and not creatives. The laptop community was fostering prior to the innovation of laptops.
When it comes to producing software, I mean, this is the fenced range here, right? Apple wants to sort of own the terms of all those apps.
So let's be clear. It's not just Apple, and this is really about the old style of operating system development versus the new style. So the original Mac OS X, Linux, Windows, anybody could do anything, as the caller suggests. It wasn't specific to laptops. It was the generation of PC operating systems. With mobile operating systems, Apple introduced a new model that Microsoft and now Google are imitating, which says, no, we need to review and approve your software. You need to use a certificate that authenticates who produced it so we know where it came from. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, we're going to take a little piece of the revenue on the side, too.
Sure. Hello.
But Apple, notice, has retrofitted and offered the Mac App Store. So now they're trying to nudge developers through the App Store in the Mac operating system as well. Microsoft is not yet trying to do that on the desktop. I think either they will or they'll try to fade the desktop OS out and go all the modern or Metro user interface.
Well, you know, one way or another, Hiawatha, everything ends up a little dusty in the cellar. The typewriter's down there in most houses now. A lot of houses got some old PCs down there that they're not using anymore. Sounds to me like not so much maybe a banishment, but a hybrid and but still big screens around the house in some places, but all hooked up as in your house, Hiawatha, to maybe that little teeny tiny mobile handheld thing.
Absolutely. And eventually maybe built right into the house in a little modular configuration where you unplug it every 5 years and put in a new computer because everything in your home is going to be talking to a server, and in building the server right into the house might become the standard issue.
Well, we will see how much we drive the technology and how much the technology, as it loves to do, will drive us. It's been great to have the two of you with us today. Frank Gillette, Vice President, Principal Analyst at Forrester Research. Thanks so much for being here, Frank.
Thank you.
And Hiawatha Bray, Tech Reporter and Business Columnist par excellence for the Boston Globe. Always great to have you here. Thanks for coming
Thanks
in.
Thanks a lot.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.